sector to lead the way.
Max Kenner, founder and executive director of the Bard Prison Initiative. He conceived and created the Bard Prison Initiative as a student volunteer organization when he was an undergraduate at Bard. That does it for our program today. We have a job opening, director of development. You can go to our website, democracynow.org, to get the details and send in your resume. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Nermeen Sheikh, Sam Alkoff, Robbie Karen. Special thanks to Julie Crosby, Becca Staley. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Wonder Ballroom, presenting Green Sky Bluegrass's three-night stand November 5th through the 7th, a bluegrass band that plays rock shows. Individual tickets and three-day passes for Green Sky Bluegrass are available at wonderballroom.com. The time is 8 o'clock. Stay tuned. Coming up, it's Positively Revolting Talk Radio. Guest host Lisa Loving spends the hour with local grassroots activist and author Ajamu Umi.
President Obama visits a federal prison. There's a call to federal prosecutors to lessen the use of mandatory minimums. There's bipartisan congressional support for reform. Tune in to Prison Pipeline to hear national leader Van Jones, who believes now is the time to end the mass incarceration industry in America. That's Prison Pipeline, November 9th at 6:30 p.m.
And the first one now will later be last, for the times, they are a-changin'.
What would you have instead?
This is it.
Comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
It's 8:01, and this is Positively Revolting Talk Radio. Sitting in for Ani and Lynn, I'm Lisa Loving. Today, Pan-Africanism, housing, equity, feeding hungry kids. Today we spend the hour with local grassroots activist and author Ajamu Umi. He's the founder of Portland's All African People's Revolutionary Party, and their breakfast program, their free breakfast program for local kids at Columbia Villa, is serving dozens of families. Ajamu, thank you so much for being here. I feel like these are always positive shows with you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Lisa. I appreciate being here.
Thanks. Can you give us an update on what's going on with the AAPR of Oregon, AAPRP of Oregon, and start with that Kids Free Breakfast program? This is such a compelling program.
Sure. Well, first, I need to make sure people, you know, realize that the All African People's Revolutionary Party is an independent Pan-African political party that's based in Africa. So we're not just a lot of people think we're just here in Portland. No, this is a new chapter here in Portland. In fact, I'm going to be traveling to Ghana in December to visit our chapter there. So we're all over the world. But here we've initiated this free breakfast program. And of course, it has to be said that we are standing on the shoulders of Brother Kent Ford and the Black Panther Party from the 1960s here in Portland, who of course had a national free breakfast program. So the idea inspired us here in Portland to start one, and we did that in April of this year in the New Columbia area of North Portland. And so every Monday and Friday since April, including right now this morning, we have comrade militants who are on the ground feeding children, teaching children how to speak Twi or West African Akan Bantu, reading to children about African culture, and talking to them and inspiring them to want to feel good about themselves and their ability to impact change in a society that's criminalizing them every day.
Listeners, I just want to give you the heads up in advance. I would love to hear from other people who are doing concrete things to help kids today. Last week we were looking at houselessness, which that was a really compelling show as well. But today I just, and we were going to talk about a lot of issues, but if you are working with kids and doing something that you thought up to make kids healthier and less hungry, we'd love to hear from you. 503-231-8187. And Ajamo, we were just talking and you have a vision for doing more grassroots, resource building in the Villa, right, in Columbiaville. Can you talk about that a little? This is a breakfast program in Columbiaville. Columbiaville used to be the old Columbiaville was the biggest housing housing project in the state, mm-hmm, of Oregon for many years. And it became, and it was very old too. It had been, right, there since like World War II or earlier. And it became a place where, it was kind of violent. It became a violent, mm-hmm, place. People who were trapped in cycles of difficulty basically got stuck there. And then this Hope 6 development, a federal housing development, came in. I want to say it was 10 or 12 years ago, 15 years ago. They tore the whole old thing down and rebuilt a new community. Mm-hmm. And we had a lot of reservations because Hope 6, and I'm just saying this, had never been used productively before. Mm-hmm. I'm putting that out. I mean, I covered this like a blanket years ago. Hope 6 is a federal housing, affordable housing construction program that lasted for many years, but it was sued in almost every city where they built a complex, actually. So I would love to hear, what is your opinion about, mm-hmm, what's going on in Columbiaville? How is this worked out? I know some people were displaced who've never been able to come back. So talk, mm-hmm, about what you see at Columbiaville, because it really is, in many ways, it is the heart of North Portland. I'm, mm-hmm, saying that.
Well, I think, you know, people have to remember, when you talk about housing projects, like, what is a project? A project is an experiment. So the idea behind that was never to provide quality housing, safe housing, productive and healthy environment for African people, poor white people, indigenous people, whoever lives there. That was never the intention. The intention is to corral people and to have them in this particular environment and control. And you can see that by the number of police that function out there. So our approach in coming in there is, one, first, totally respecting the integrity and the position of the people that live there, because they have to live there and exist there every day. And if people know history, you know, we're following in the footsteps of those that came before us. So if you look at models of previous organizations like the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, for example, they went into Mississippi and Alabama with that same respect for the people that were there, and they went about the arduous task of day-to-day working with those folks to organize and make change. So that's no different than what we're doing. It's a hard message for a lot of people in the Pacific Northwest, where everything's adrenaline fueled and we have to have excitement and we have to go from event to event. This is not that. This is day-to-day tedious working with people, organizing. When you're up at 6:37 in the morning and you're talking to children, there's nobody there for you. You have to generate all the energy yourself. There's no TV cameras. Nobody's hailing your name. None of that is happening. You have to generate all that. So we have been about carrying out that work on a day-to-day basis. Building relationships is a lot of it. Building relationships with the children, building relationships with their parents, taking the children on field trips, talking to them, listening to them, and just trying to inspire in them some understanding of what it is. One of the children recently was explaining to me that he was upset because some of his classmates were criticizing the breakfast program. They were talking negatively about us teaching the children African languages. They were using the N-word and describing me and how I was talking to the children about learning about African culture. And he was upset because he didn't understand why they didn't see why it was a positive thing to do that. And I explained to him that, you know, we're coming in, it's like ripping a Band-Aid off of an open sore. So the way I look at it, like, the fact that his little classmate called me the N-word and is talking about the breakfast program, that's a very positive thing. My worry is that nobody pays attention. So I understand, like, as Sacred Ture taught us, you know, if nobody's talking about you, that's because you're not doing anything. So the first stage is, people will talk about you. They'll make fun of you. But that's a sign that you're a force to be reckoned with. So we will continue to be organizing out there on a day-to-day basis, building relationships. We hope to expand it beyond just a breakfast program to some independent schooling, to some community patrolling, to eliminate a lot of the problems that happen, to a lot of things that empower us to see our existence as a liberated existence, as a people who can, you know, contribute positively on our own and make our own decisions, and we don't need outside armies to come into our communities and control us and repress us. So that's what we're doing, but it's going to take time. And so we're just, in my view, we're just laying the initial foundation for the work that will continue out there for quite some time.
And I have to chime in. When you say outside armies coming in to control or repress, there was a shooting. I can't remember if it was a fatal shooting some few years ago in Columbia Villa, and a homeowner came. He heard people running through his yard at night, and he went out to confront who it was, and it was a SWAT team, and I feel as if they shot him and terrorized his family. Mm-hmm. And as this played out, it turned out that this particular SWAT team was from a suburban town. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, when we're talking about, I really like some police officers that I've met, and this is, I'm sure that they would agree that this is part of the issue that people are looking at that is completely unacceptable, because it took forever to get the bureaus to even admit that this was a problem, and this guy did absolutely nothing wrong. And so I just had to put that out. Mm-hmm. Listeners, again, if you live in Columbia Villa, if you work in Columbia Villa, I would love to hear from you as well. 503-231-8187. Because I feel as if a coworker of mine, who's done a lot of reporting for the newspaper about Columbia Villa, she always talked about how many the families there now are from all over the world.
Right.
Can you talk a little bit about who lives in the villa?
Well, that's part of the reason why we looked at that neighborhood. It's the highest concentration of African people in Oregon.
Yes.
It has 11%, 20% of that community is people of African descent. It has about 12% of the people speak a language other than English as a primary language. There's a huge community of people from Somalia, from the Congo, from Ethiopia, from various countries in West Africa. And we, being a Pan-African political party, like, we recognize all people of African descent as African people. The only difference between us is basically a boat stop. So, you know, we don't recognize the artificial barriers that have been imposed against us. Those don't benefit us. They benefit the people trying to keep us divided and oppressed. So, you know, when we see people from Somalia, Ethiopia, those are our folks, and we're going to get to talk to those folks and try to bring us into one vision, one accord, where we can work together, because the problems we have are the same.
Mm. And we are, this is Positively Revolting Talk Radio. Sitting in for Ani and Lynn, I'm Lisa Loving. We're talking with grassroots activist and author Ajamu Umi with the Portland's All African People's Revolutionary Party. We're talking about some of the work that they are doing right now at Columbia Villa. In a little while, we'll talk about the work that you guys are going to do when you go to Africa. So, mm-hmm. I want to come back, and by the way, listeners, are you working with kids? Do you have some kind of special project for kids, a grassroots thing you invented? We would, let us know what it is, and we would love to hear about that and support what you're doing too. 503-231-8187. Also, if you live in the villa, I want to know what you see out there. When I go out there, Ajamu, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful place. And the Pacific Northwest is environmentally beautiful, in my opinion. There's green spaces there. I think the buildings are kind of pretty. There's public art. There's this one public art that freaks me out. It's weird looking. I'm just leaving that alone. But there's that wonderful community grocery store out there. There are people who have tried to organize around this community that's kind of shoved out and isolated, right? But what issues, as you're out there meeting families, talking to kids, what issues do you see the residents dealing with? And I mean, we've talked about it a little, but I really want to be crystal clear on this.
Yeah,
what
sure.
are the people dealing with out there?
Well, I mean, I think that, like, and I understand what you're saying about, you know, how the buildings look nice, but for me, that's the seduction that's really about underneath we're still dealing with the same trauma and terror. A lot of the people that live out there who are from African countries are here because they're escaping
war zones.
They're escaping war zones. And, you know, people in America don't deal with why those war zones exist. You know, I mean, that's another discussion. But, you know, if there's an Al-Shabaab in Africa, if there's a Boko Haram, this government here is a large part of the reason why those negative forces exist and why they're able to terrorize people in Africa with this International Monetary Fund just totally destabilizing the infrastructure throughout the entire continent of Africa, as well as Central and South America and Asia as well. So, you know, you have that to deal with. You have the constant criminalization. You know, what the parents talk to us a lot about is they bring their children to our program or send their children to eat with us because we really make a concerted effort to feed the children quality foods as much as we can. This is an independent program. We pay for it out of our pockets, but we really make that sincere effort. And so parents are telling us that in the schools, the free breakfast programs there, that's not happening. Much of the food is very sugary. It's not very quality food. So, you know, the children are eating that by 10 a.m. They're acting up and they're being disciplined, which is a part of the process of criminalizing our youth. So, you know, we've made a commitment with Brother Brian, who owns the Columbia International Cup Coffee Shop there at 9022 North Newman, where we function the breakfast program out of, to make that commitment to make good foods. But, you know, these are the problems in our communities. Although it might look nice on the surface, what's really going on underneath is that parents are saying their children are not being treated respectfully in the schools. They're not being properly given the acknowledgement of who they are. There's nothing being talked about in the curriculum that inspires the youth to want to rise up and do anything. Everything that's being talked about is about trying to get them to assimilate into a system that is clearly demonstrated for 500 years. It has no use for us, no respect for us, and no desire to see us prosper as a people.
I have to also say on that, and we do have a caller. The number to call is 503-231-8187. I have to follow up what you just said. My beloved colleague from the Scanner newspaper, her name is Helen Silvis. She did a lot of reporting on the Somali Muslim community and how it seems like Somali Muslim teenage kids are being targeted by the FBI and secret government.
Sure.
Regarding these terrorism investigations. And I don't want to reveal information that I'm not really supposed to. It's just that it seems like you said criminalization. It was her results of her investigation that more than 100 Somali teenage boys,
right,
I believe, have been taken into the legal system. They've been arrested for this or that. And she saw this mugshot of a teenager who was just about, he had tears in his eyes, okay? It's the most compelling mugshot I've ever seen. To look at it was to want to cry.
Mm-hmm.
And she found that kid. She found his family. And it turned out that his family had come from a refugee camp in Somalia. The father had been murdered there. The kids had, the younger kids had been born there. They had a mother who was able to bring the kids to the United States. And now,
right,
this kid was the head of the family. He was the man of the family.
Right.
But the mother had no way to make a living. So this kid took a toy gun and basically tried to hold up a handy mart. And so,
mm-hmm,
he was arrested. And the picture of him, he's just, the tears are just about to fall. It's like a human being. And I just have to flag that. When we're talking about people that are being criminalized, this is a unique point here.
Mm-hmm.
Somali Muslim youth, like,
right,
Mohammed Mohamud, that guy, I'm just going to come out and say, you know, was he entrapped? And people say, well, he pressed the button twice to blow up the Christmas tree party. But that was the button the FBI built and put in his hand and said, press the button.
Right.
And
right.
I'm so pleased I didn't curse because I almost did just then. but I just have to put that out. We're not joking. This is not small potatoes. These are issues of national security as they affect grassroots community.
Mm-hmm.
I'm putting it that
way.
Well,
and here, you know, the thing is, the process they use is everything functions based on fear. You know, when I say I'm with All African People's Revolutionary Party, people get afraid. When I say that we're against capitalism, people get afraid. When I say we want socialism, people are afraid. They don't know anything about any of those concepts. We've just been programmed to be afraid of everything. So this is what happens when we're talking about, you know, the scenario you're talking about, like, Somalia has been criminalized in people's minds. They, you know, if you study, I mean, these studies have been done. You can look at like the news coverage that's taken place over the last 20 years since Black Hawk Down in the 90s in Somalia, and you can see it. The fixation on calling the people there pirates and warlords and gang members even, because people are programmed to react to the word gang member and see an African face there, a criminal face, a thug face. And so if you look at news reports that talk about Somalia, that's mostly what it is. But the reality is that in that early 1990s period, some really, according to the oil industry, well-developed oil reserves have been located in Somalia. And you can trace that location of that to the problems as they have happened. You know, if Somali ships were in U.S. waters, the U.S. military would shoot them out of the ground. So if you're sailing a boat in Somali waters and they stop you, that has nothing to do with anybody being a pirate. That's you're not supposed to be there. They have a right to protect their territory. But again, because of this warped perspective of what we get, we don't really understand stuff critically. We just react to, as Kwame Ture said, we react to stimuli. And so, you know, people will have opinions about these types of things and really know nothing about Somalia, not even be able to point it out on a map.
We are live in Studio 2 with Ajamu Umi. We're talking about New Columbia. We're talking about our communities, our friends and neighbors and families, and we got a full slate of callers. Let's go to the phone lines. Mitch is there. Mitch, what's going on?
Hey, good morning. So, hi, I'm a neighbor of New Columbia, and my position is that I'm glad to see the innovative social experiment that is New Columbia. I'm a big believer in social justice and equity, and frankly, I'm a big believer in diversity because, let's face it, sometimes the Anglo culture of Portland can be kind of chilly, and I've been actually hoping that maybe the infusion of other cultures that are a little bit warmer than ours might bring a little bit of a thaw to that. I understand that New Columbia is an experiment that attracts visitors from around the world who want to see how it's coming. And I'm glad to hear that. And I'm glad to hear about this wonderful program that is being discussed today. But my question is this. We've had an increase in violence in Columbia Park, which is just south of New Columbia, that that has increased over the past 3 or 4 years. And I think I probably could speak for some of my neighbors when I say that, you know, I think it's an open question at this point from the point of view of the neighborhood about what the cost benefit of this social experiment is. Is it really working? And to what extent, you know, does ultimately the community New Columbia become a liability to the neighbors because of the increased violence?
Wow. All right. Thanks, Mitch. Let's talk about that. Thanks for calling. I also want to say there's an increase in violence in my pretty freaking middle class neighborhood. Just had to put that out. What do you think?
Well, again, I think people are programmed to react to things based on fear and not information, not analysis. And so that's the nature of it. I mean, this is not rocket science. If you put crabs in a barrel, what happens? They start fighting to keep each other in there. So when you close people in, I don't care how nice it might look to you empirically, when you close people in, when people have limited opportunities economically, when people don't have the opportunity to sustain themselves, and there are generations and generations of that, this is the result of this. These problems have proven that they can be resolved, but there's no commitment by this society to resolve them. And the reason why there's no commitment is because there's a very profitable entity called the schools to prison pipeline. So somebody has to provide that cheap labor to make the clothes for Walmart and Kmart and all of these big multinational corporations.
Prison
so,
blues,
you know,
are
it's
really
like
sown.
It's yeah. I mean, it's the way people in this country are programmed. It's like we will focus on somebody who robs a 7-Eleven down the street from us and gets $30. And that's the most important thing that needs to be addressed. And it's the most serious problem that we can identify. And we will not mention once these corporations that are robbing you blind. The fact that you have Walmart here that everybody that goes to work subsidizes because they pay their workers so little. I mean, we can go on and on. But the point is that, you know, we plan to go into that community and help address those issues. But the bigger problem is this system and the increasing inequities within it, and the fact that people are going to find ways, and the biggest employer in most of inner city communities is drug selling and drug trading and these types of things that generate this type of violence. So, you know, we can address these problems, but we have to address them from the standpoint of providing equity and getting to the root of the problem. Uncle Sam is the biggest drug dealer in America. And so we have to identify a different type of system that will place people over profit. And when we can do that, then you will see these problems eliminated overnight. There are examples of where these types of things don't exist. A little island named Cuba, these types of problems don't exist. Why is that? Cuba just last week announced that they've eliminated mother-to-child HIV transmissions. A little small country in the Caribbean has accomplished this, where the most technologically advanced country in the world, the U.S., can't even cure a common cold. Why is that? These are the type of critical questions that people have to ask, not why there's some violence in a park where people are forced to live together with no hope, no possibility for creating a better future for themselves and their families. Just a building that may look right on the outside, but their future has no positive impact for them to move forward. I mean, these are easy situations to decipher and explain why these things are happening. But we're not about just explaining what happens in the world. We're about solving the problems that our people and humanity face. So that's the work we're going to do.
Hey, Mitch, I want to follow up on that, too, and tell you a little sea story. My dad used to say, tell me a sea story. Mitch, what I hear you saying is that, you know, if one were to look at New Columbia as something like an experiment, that it's really not working. And although I hear you saying that it's not working for the nearby community, and that's fine from your point of view. I think that I'm more concerned about what's happening inside New Columbia, not your property values. That sounds so rude, and I don't mean to be rude at all. But I have to tell you something. This again, the money, the federal money that was paid to build this project, Hope 6, these Hope 6 developments all over the United States basically did the same thing. They bottle up people who don't have resources in one small place. And there were people at the time, and I'm thinking of a certain man who I'm not going to name because he's a real headache and I don't want to encourage him. That's a horrible thing to say, but I'm saying it. He argued with the city endlessly that best practices for affordable housing is not to bottle people up, but to basically bring your affordable housing into the community, to integrate low income, middle class, even upper income people in the same neighborhood. And actually, that was happening in Portland for a while. His point was, if you just create one of these developments, you're just going to bottle people up and create a violent situation that's going to impact everyone and all the people around. And that was predictable. Mm-hmm. That's predictable. It's what happened. And it is, Mitch, what I hear you saying. And maybe I'm just misunderstanding some of the things that make me such a crabby person. I don't know.
Can I give you a quick example? Like, some of the kids that we interact with regularly in the breakfast program, these are the types of things we see from the children. We see children who have taught themselves how to play the piano beautifully. We see children who sing, who engage, who have outstanding skills with mathematical games, just outstanding potential from these children. But the problem is that it's only when they come around us that these skills are reinforced. When they go to school, they have to deal with that dogmatic curriculum.
Sit down, and that's all I care about.
Not any kind of focus. And I'm not, you know, I know some of the teachers try, but we know the situation in Oregon is that class sizes are 30, 40 children. So it's impossible for one person. My daughter's a school teacher, so I understand this. It's impossible for one person to, you know, have positive interactions in that type of environment. So I'm not blaming all the teachers, but what I'm saying, the system is the problem, in the sense that there is no room for these children to be properly nurtured and developed in a way that creates that kind of positive positivity. This is what we're trying to do. We're willing to go into those parks and work with those children. We're not concerned about property values either. We're concerned with advancing the potential and the life growth of these youth, because that's really what's important. And that's really where our focus is. A lot of this is designed to pit people against each other. You know, the problems, we need to stop looking at each other and look up.
Oh, my. All righty. It is 8:29. This is Positively Revolting Talk Radio. We're in Studio 2 live with grassroots activist Ajamu Umi, Portland's All-African People's Revolutionary Party, their free breakfast program for local kids at Columbia Villa. We're talking about a whole bunch of things, and the number to call, 503-231-8187. Let's go back to the phone lines. Joanne, whoa, what's going on?
Who cares? Anyway, I am in wow, shock, and awe after a couple of minutes. Your male guest spot, I feel like I want to cry. This is old stuff, and it's new stuff. And he is such a powerful speaker. And even what you just said in the last few minutes, I can identify whatever the process is with what you said. Oh, I'm going to start to cry. But anyway, I got to say this, even though it may be mean. I got to say this, and it's probably an example of what your guest just said about pitting people against each other. But I wish his energy, I wish this energy on this program now would go far beyond cable and hit this culture and break it apart and heal it and strengthen it. Oh, my God. Oh, anyway, I got to say what I think might be mean to you folks.
Okay, go ahead.
I forgot the energy. I don't love you programmers on KBOO anymore, because you're not talking about or doing, or people not doing anything about my low income issues. And I just want in my housing, and I just lame a couple. This ongoing creepy, I know the police and FBI are behind it. This ongoing creepy spying 24 hours a day for years in my housing by residents, and also misusing public housing. And here it is, pit each other against us. I mean, going in the trap, I guess. Putting middle-class people who have lost their jobs and lives here and helping them first before me and my daughter and her children and that, and help us get out into middle class. That'll never happen, but thank you for listening, darling.
All right.
Goodbye.
Love you, Joanne. Cheese and crackers. Haven't heard from Joanne in a long time. I just want to follow up on what Joanne said too, and this is where she's coming from. This is a story that we don't talk about enough either. People that I know who live in public housing, affordable housing in Portland, housing that's run by the city, I've toured people's apartments, I've met people, and you're at the mercy of your apartment manager when you're right in that system. We're talking about systems again, and I've heard of one gigantic apartment building in downtown Portland where everybody loves the manager. And I'm fascinated by that one too, that this guy actually helps people. He makes an effort to help people. We have been talking about New Columbia. What happens when you have these projects, as we called it, and you put people together in the system where they're just kind of trapped? And something we haven't talked about are the rules of living there. And that's something that I know Joanne has really suffered with. Mm-hmm. When you live in affordable housing and people, you if you break any of the rules, you are going to end up on the street. And so people are really at the mercy of a system there. And Joanne's right. And I would really like to do more coverage of just public housing, what it's like to live in a public housing project.
Sure.
So Joanne, last week we did a bunch of stuff about houselessness, but that's not what you're talking about. And so I respect where you're coming from. This is KBOO Portland. This is Positively Revolting Talk Radio. Sitting in for Ani and Lynn, I'm Lisa Loving. We're live in Studio 2 with grassroots activist and author Ajamu Umi of Portland's All African People's Revolutionary Party, talking about their free breakfast program for local kids at Columbia Villa. We're talking about a vast tapestry of issues. So let's go back to the phone lines. Free? What's going on, man?
Nothing. It's free music. Thanks for having me on. Greetings and thanks to Ajamu for doing great work and great organizing. And we're just, I'm calling in to say that the work that you do around refusing to let people forget hope and accurate historical analysis, and the fact that we're talking about all these reforms. Unless we stop capitalism, none of the reforms are going to come. And you are doing that work, Comandante. Thank you. And we're so excited to hear you're going to Africa in December. That is great. So keep kicking butt. Hasta siempre, Comandante. Thanks for taking my call. Y'all have a good day.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you. That's that. I recognize that voice. That's my friend, the Jester. He's one of our best. I won't say his real name, but he's one of our best supporters here in Portland. So thank you, brother. Appreciate you. Love you.
Can we call you Subcomandante Ajamu? I mean, is that a weird thing?
He's sounds
like
good to me.
He's giving you like stars and stripes on your uniform there. Let's go back to the phone lines. We have Kristen on the line. Kristen, what are you thinking about today?
Hey, well, I just wanted to say thank you so much for having Ajamu on. I love hearing you speak. It's always a great pep talk, and I just really appreciate that. And also, I just wanted to say that I did my capstone at PSU a few years ago. They offered a class to investigate or to learn about the.
Oh, no, your phone's breaking out. You sound like you're on Mars. Can you stick it closer to your mouth and say that again, the last sentence?
Sure. So this class, we were to find out how refugees come to the United States. I think maybe you can explain it better.
Your phone's cupping. You just sound like you're from Mars. But I think what I think Kristen's asking is, what is the process for how immigrants and refugees come to this country? And that's a really fascinating and important question because it goes back to who we were talking about. Can you answer that or talk about that a little
Absolutely.
Bit?
Absolutely. I mean, it can't be seen just in the context of policies around immigration. This issue goes way far beyond that. You have to look at it in the context of the history of this country. This is a settler colonial regime. This society was built on the land of the indigenous people of the Western Hemisphere, and Africans were brought here to build up this empire. The capitalist system, the seed money to develop capitalism, to industrialize, was based on the triangular slave trade. All of the banking corporations, Barclays Bank, Lloyd's of London, Wachovia Bank, Wells Fargo, they've all in recent years acknowledged that they started from seed money that was provided from enslaving my ancestors. So that's not just, it's not just hyperbole, that's history, that's documented. They've
the
all,
Aetna,
you can Google
insurance
it.
Company,
yeah,
too.
It's,
they
exactly,
insured
Aetna, they insured enslaved Africans. So this entire economy was built on that exploitation, and it moved wealth from other parts of the world, that process did, to here, where it's controlled by these multinational corporations that benefited from this process that they put in place. And they continue to exist based on this same exploitative system. The children of Ghana produced a poster recently that said, when you eat chocolate, you're eating our skin. What that's saying is the cocoa industry, which comes out of Ghana, is so exploitative that by buying chocolate and eating chocolate, what you're doing is killing Africans every day. We could talk about the same thing when we talk about columbite tantalite or coltan, which is the mineral ore that's used to power cell phones, laptop computers, tablets, etc. This mineral ore sells at about $400 US a pound at the expense of thousands of African lives every month who are forced to hand pick this device. This entire economy here is built on exploiting Africa. So when you talk about people coming to the US, it's not about, oh, they're coming here to find freedom and opportunity. It's about this country has stolen the world's wealth, and the only opportunities now are based here in the belly of the beast. So when you have African immigrants who come here, Asian immigrants, people from the Middle East, whatever, this is because of the sabotage, people from Central and South America, the sabotage that's been inflicted on their societies. The information on this is all around us, you all. I mean, there was even a Jennifer Lopez movie a few years back called Juarez. I mean, this is a motion picture. It's not even a book. I mean, you can look at a movie that talks about this, where she talks about how the structural readjustment programs from the International Monetary Fund, how that's destabilized. This is what the movie's about, how this has destabilized Mexico to the point where these women, hundreds of women, are bussed into this town to work all these hours in these oppressive conditions. And because of that, the women are pushed to become drug addicts. And then these people sell them drugs and get them hooked and they become prostitutes, and it just contributes to the destabilization of the society. This type of thing is happening all over the world. And so you can't just look at people coming here and say, well, they're coming to America because America's great. No, they're coming to America because America's the thief. Uncle Sam stole everything, and people are coming here to just get a part of what naturally belongs to them in the first place.
And we are live in Studio 2 with Ajamu Umi, and the phone lines are free. Don't wait until the last 3 minutes to call, okay? Oh, we do have one caller, but let me give the phone. Do you have a project, just an ad hoc project that you're part of, working with kids and helping kids and helping feed kids or give kids what they need? We would love to hear what you're doing so that we can support that. Do you live in New Columbia? What do you see? What do you feel like you need? 503-231-8187. And we do have another caller. John, what's going on with you today?
Hello. Yes, my name is John Slaughter, friend of Ajamu's. And first of all, I would love to say that, number one, he's doing great work in the community. Great work. I do live actually close to New Columbia. I live kind of in the outskirts right over by Roosevelt. Been in this area for the past 5 years. But one of the things I wanted to address is the notion of breaking down the system. And I wanted to ask Ajamu, because I actually did go to the Million Man March with him. I wanted to ask him, what does Justice or Else mean for us in Portland? And how does that look for a lot of us African-Americans in this New Columbia and or just in Portland altogether?
Yeah, peace, thank Brother you. Slaughter. I hope you're feeling better, and thank you for the question. I think one of the things that happened from the march, and yes, we went there, over a million people with no CNN, no CIA coverage, none of that. We gathered and we talked about this message. Brother Slaughter is talking about Justice or Else. And so, you know, there are a number of groups who are meeting here in Portland to come up with a program to implement this here, as well as other cities across this land. And so, you know, one of the things that we're going to be focusing on is working with our people to mediate a lot of the conflict that, you know, people have brought up, so that we can begin to solve the problems that have been imposed upon our community. But also externally, we're talking about looking at this holiday season as it comes and approaching it differently, like us being able to come together on the same accord as a community. And this is everybody, no matter what nationality you are, coming together the same accord. It's time for us to stop being prostitutes for the capitalist system. Every year they take us through the same process where you're pressured to spend money you don't have, to buy gifts for people, for the most part, you either can't stand them or at best you have very dysfunctional relationships with. And we need to change this process. We need to stop feeling this pressure to do this and use whatever money you're doing to do that to maybe have some collective get-togethers. We'll begin to talk about how to solve the problems in this community. We don't need to be going out spending money celebrating. You shouldn't be celebrating Thanksgiving anyway, and you shouldn't be celebrating the one in December, because it's all about spending money that should be going to more productive things in this community. So we're going to be making that call of people. Yes, we're coming after Santa Claus, because Santa Claus represents everything that's wrong with our society, because we're talking about material gain and expressing your value for humanity and the people you love through material gain, when we should be talking about how to address the spiritual and physical problems that impact our society. So we're encouraging you not to go out and spend that money. This is easy for me because I don't celebrate any of those holidays anyway. My daughter's 28 years old and she's never celebrated Christmas her entire life. And for people that know her, she's fine. She's well adjusted. She's intelligent, beautiful. She's not scarred because I didn't lie to her about some European coming in our house bringing gifts. So this is, stop lying to your children and let's get together and use this time of year for healing and for forward progress, and stop buying into this thing where we're just consumers. The most people talk about violence in Columbia Park. The most violent day of the year is the day after Thanksgiving, when people are trying to get, every year there's deaths and violence all across the land because people are trying to get that flat screen TV with money they can't afford to spend on it anyway. So that's the message we're promoting. Let's come together. Let's stop being guinea pigs for this system.
John, I want to ask you a follow-up question. What were your what were your thoughts on the Million Man March? What did you see and what did you feel there? What did you take away?
Well, I will tell you, I'm glad I went. Actually, I spent my entire weekend with Jammu and people from the party, and I was fed the entire weekend. I am still, you know, I have this saying right now, you know, people said they're on cloud nine. I'm not on cloud nine. I'm on cloud 99. I had a chance to experience black heaven. I had a chance to be fed, but then also had a chance to just experience and talk with, you know, educated black individuals, African individuals who know about what's going on in our American society. I had a chance to enjoy the march. I had a chance to stand and listen to the minister. I didn't go to really hear his speech. I really went to just experience. But then more importantly, to hear the message what's going on around the nation, not just from the nation, not just from the minister, but from what's going on around the nation, the different individuals and the groups who are doing real work. And so I know that there's real work that needs to be done in Portland. And so I'm invigorated by the energy, but it's just a show. It's a hip hop show. It's a chance for us black people to get together, which is a great thing. But as I went to that event, and a couple of weeks later, I went to Hip Hop in Portland, which was a good day, two Thursdays ago. And the result of Hip Hop in Portland is fun and all, but 3 days later, an African American.
Oh no, we lost him
after the Little Boosie show. So,
you repeat what you just said, though, because we just lost you for a moment. What did you just now say?
I love the event because that's what the Million Man March is. But knowing that when we come back to our own cities, there's still work to be done.
Right.
I went to Hip Hop in Portland, which is a great day, good event. 3 days after seeing a young man that I saw at that event, he was actually shot dead behind Dante's after the Little Boosie show. Mm-hmm. So. Knowing that we can get together on one accord on any given day is great, but knowing that we still have to come back to our own towns and do real work, talking about the real work within our community, within the black community that needs to be talked about, doing a lot of that reconciliation, that mediation pieces, talking about how we can patrol our own neighborhoods, talking about how we can actually instill better education in our schools, and talking about that other front against the system. So I enjoyed myself at the Million Man March. I don't think we should have another one. If we have another one 20 years down the road, that means we're not doing what we should have been doing back in 1995 or back in the Civil Rights Movement. So I had a great time. It was a life-changing, altering experience, but it will be one that's just another memory and one that we know that we have to make sure that we're bringing those attributes of work and real work to our city.
All right. Thank you so much for calling, John.
Thank you
so much for calling. This is KBOO Portland. This is Positively Revolting Talk Radio. Sitting in for Ani and Lynn, I'm Lisa Loving. We're live in Studio 2 with grassroots activist and author Ajamu Umi. He's with Portland's All African People's Revolutionary Party. They're doing amazing grassroots organizing at the Columbia Villa Housing Project, and their free breakfast program for local kids is drawing, I think, dozens of families. Mm-hmm. And so we want to go back to the phone lines. We've got people with stuff to say. Karen, what's on your mind today?
Well, first I wanted to say how much I appreciate and respect Mr. Ajamu Umi and also you, Lisa. You're doing an incredibly good job, I think.
Thank you, Karen.
And I wanted to mention something. I saw an article in the New York Times recently that mentioned that kids' IQ can be raised as much as 20 points if the expectations are that the kids are smart. And I used to teach using that principle because the studies that I heard about way back in the 60s, that's where this information comes from. And so if we know that, say, 40% of the kids are going to have their IQ points raised 20%, we ought to have the expectation that all people are equally intelligent and see what unfolds. And I think there are many forms of intelligence that we don't honor. We don't honor the physical intelligence, except in the sports thing. but the kind of physical intelligence it takes to be a tree trimmer. We don't honor the musical intelligence of all people. We don't honor the creative intelligence of all people. We honor the kind of intelligence that produces the most militaristic culture on the planet. And I also wanted to say to Ajamu that I'm old enough to remember the Black Panther Party, and I'm old enough to remember I taught in the ghetto during that period in Baltimore, and I'm old enough to remember the Black Liberation Army. I was on a legal defense committee for some members of the Black Liberation Army, and I'm not an advocate of violence. I think in the long run it only creates more violence, but I got it. I got why people reacted that way. So I just wanted to say how much I've learned from you also, Ajamu, today. It's reminded me of lots of lessons and how rich your intelligence is and how much you know. And I just wanted to say thank you to both of you.
Thank you, Karen.
Thank you.
Just quickly to follow up, Karen's talking about different kinds of intelligence. I want to flag for people an education writer, Howard Gardner. He wrote a book. He wrote books about the theory of multiple intelligences. Mm-hmm. If you want to learn more about that, you could just stick that in a search engine. Totally worth looking at. Did you want to respond at all?
I really do quickly. One of the things Karen said, I think she's absolutely right when she talks about expectations of intelligence. I mean, I know that from my own life. When I was 14, I was in school. I was bused. This was in the 1970s in San Francisco. I lived in the inner city and I was bused out to what they called the Sunset District. And when I went into a store after baseball practice, three older European white men jumped on me and beat me and hospitalized me for being in the neighborhood. And after that, I withdrew from school. I didn't go to class. I stopped going to class. I stopped participating, and I got into all types of trouble. But what was interesting to me is how my teachers responded. Like, their response was when they would see me after I hadn't attended their class, their immediate response was to threaten me with sanctions for not coming to class. No one ever asked me, like, what's going on with you? Why were you such a good student initially, and then all of a sudden you just dropped off? So the expectation of me when I was 14 was that you're failing, you're going to lose, you're going to go to prison, you're going to do that. So with my 14-year-old brain, I began to participate in activities that were designed to take me along that path. I think that if one teacher would have just reached out and just said, hey, what's going on with you? Why are you not showing up to class anymore? Tell me what's going on. I would have loved to have poured out all the pain and anguish I was suffering, all of the confusion as to why three grown adults would try to end my life as a young teenager just because of what I looked like. So this is a great example that she's talking about, that, you know, when we bring inspiration to our youth, they will respond to that. But if we talk about them just based on what the media tells us they represent, and then we wonder why we don't get positive results from them, I mean, that should be pretty easy to figure out.
Hey, I want to say one other thing, too, because Karen, she's talking about what is it that we can do to wrap around our kids to improve their outcomes of their later life. I just recently found out that my great-grandmother died in an insane asylum of pellagra. Pellagra is a niacin deficiency. It's a vitamin deficiency that results in what they call the three Ds, diarrhea, dermatitis, and dementia. She died in an insane asylum at a young age, and the family never even claimed her body or anything like that. And it was because of diet. It was literally a form of starvation. And when we're looking, I used to be a lunch mommy at Sabin Elementary School when it was considered to be a crisis school. This is going to sound harsh, but those school lunches, as well as the breakfasts, were garbage. Yeah. That school food is garbage. And I don't see how anyone could expect kids to sit in a chair. The free lunches are like a super sweet muffin, maybe some sugary fruit salad that came from a factory, and maybe some milk. And, you know, it can't. Kids need. Ashami, what do you feed the kids?
We have everything from oatmeal to pancakes to breakfast sandwiches. We always try to have fresh fruit available. We always try to have fresh juices available. you know, a lot of that, it depends on the day. Like, we organize the menu pretty much that day. But yeah, just try to have things that are going to give them sustenance.
But the point I'm making is what fuel the kids are working on not only affects their ability to sit in a chair and focus on what the teacher's saying, it can affect their mental health. And there's a stream of people right now that are saying, all the people, corn-based diet, right? My ancestor was a beautiful woman, and I always bonded with this woman. And so this corn-based diet is exactly what people are eating right now who eat at the Handy Mart all the time. How many people do you know that eat more than two meals a day from a Handy Mart? I bet you know some people. Mm-hmm. That corn syrup, all that stuff, it has no nutrient value. So I'm putting that out. We've got a few more minutes left of the show. We're live in the studio with Ajamu Umi. We're talking about the All-African People's Revolutionary Party, their programs at New Columbia. Let's try to just burn through those phone lines. Who's next? Jane?
I'm sorry. First dial in area code.
Yeah, we lost someone there. We're talking to the robot lady. But we'll go back to, I know James is there. James, what's going on with you?
Oh, not much. I'm enjoying the conversation on the radio. I like the idea of all, you know, every community of color has its own separate issues. You know, black folks got to deal with one thing, Mexicans got to deal with others. But I think that the important thing is that we all start finding that intersectionality in which we come together, because all of us have been marginalized by the colonial powers. You know, if you go to church and you're a person of color and don't realize that, you know, the certain things that the church is, you know, that's predicated upon you by them coming in, you fail to recognize that, then, you know, it's part of the problem, you know. Or if you're, you know, realizing that, you know, they're being able to tap in, being able to discover, like, spirituality that comes from your own people, and being able to use that to enrich yourself and to provide yourself with a connection to the earth and a connection to the primitive truths of who we are as people, and realize that so much of what we participate in this day and age is artificial. It has no basis in any reality except for the reality that it continues to propagate white power.
All right. Thanks for chipping in, James. We're going to cut you loose because we've only got about 4 minutes left. I want to ask you a really strange question, Ajamu. This is a strange one. You know, here at KBOO, there's a lot of people here at KBOO because we're refugees from the straight world, whatever that means to people, right? And a lot of people here, actually, I think it's fair to say, have been victimized by religion. So there's a sense that a revolutionary movement, this is just my take, a lot of people that I think of who are into revolutionary movements, maybe they've got a kind of a twisted relationship to spirituality. Mm-hmm. Can you talk for a few minutes? You have mentioned this issue of spirituality. How does spirituality inform revolution?
Well, and that's a great question. For us, it's different. Like, most people's concept of revolution is the old Marxist-Leninist model, where Karl Marx said religion is the opium of the people. You know, we don't believe that. We believe, as African people, spirituality is a major part of who we are. You can't organize among African people talking about you don't believe in God. People aren't going to listen to anything else you have to say. So we're not anti-spirituality or anti-religion. We, in the APRP, we have people who are Muslims, Christians, Jews, Rastafarians, atheists, everything. So our position is based on, like, some of the writings of Ahmed Sekou Touré speak to it directly, where we talk about the harmony between revolution and religion. Our version of religion is Miss Fannie Lou Hamer, for example, who put a Bible in her bosom and went out and was beaten almost to death trying to register Africans to vote in Mississippi, and telling people when she was in the hospital that she would be fine because she was doing the work of Jesus. We believe in that. That's the role of religion and spirituality, is to empower people to fight back against injustice. And if you're using your spirituality to do that, we have no problem with you whatsoever.
All right. We, you know what, Ajami, we've only got a couple minutes left, and I don't think we have time for any more callers. I'm putting that out. And I just, now I want to really nail this issue of what is the work that you guys are going to do in Africa, and how can people support you? We've got just a few minutes, mm-hmm. and let's just grab that one.
Thank you. So, you know, we're going to Africa. We're taking books over for our Ghanaian chapter. Myself and one of our sister comrades here, Sister Adrian, are going over on December 1st. And what we're going to be doing there is, like, our chapter there in Ghana has a lot of projects that they're engaged in, food co-ops, local community organizing in and around Accra, Ghana. So we're going to participate fully. Hopefully we'll get to attend one of their work study circles. We have work study here. We work and study. We'll get to do that, but primarily just work among the people in Ghana and learn what that work looks like to bring about Pan-Africanism on the ground in Africa. People can get more information at www.aaprporegon.org. aaprporegon.org.
Now, tell us more about how we can support the Children's Free Breakfast Program. It is at Columbia International Cup Coffee Shop. Tell us more how we can support that. I know people want to support that.
Yeah, and we appreciate that. You can go to the website as well, and you can make a donation, and we use 100% of that money for food and supplies. We gave away school supplies last month to dozens of children. All of that comes from the support we get from the community, as well as out of our own pockets. So aaprporegon.org, there's a tab for the free breakfast program, and you can support, and we thank you very much. We're an independent revolutionary party, though, so we can't get you anything from Uncle Sam, but we appreciate your support.
And thanks so much for being here. That's it for our
thank
show.
You.
Check out Portland's All African People's Revolutionary Party work, again, at aaprporegon.org. And stay tuned for Political Perspectives.
Comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.